AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Check one, two. Check one, two. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Proctor, and in this show, I'm going to break down the game of college football and try to give you a quick listen to scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. All right, everybody. Welcome to week six of the college football season. We are going to be doing kind of a joint episode today as the Utes have a bye week this week and are just wrapping up their fifth game, against the West Virginia Mountaineers. And the Cougs wrapped up their game against the Colorado Buffaloes and are preparing subsequently for that same West Virginia team this coming Friday. We're just going to do a joint episode today for BYU and Utah, and next week we'll jump back into the regular format of having a separate episode for both. So if you're a Utah fan looking for the recap of the West Virginia game, it's here. If you're a BYU fan looking for the recap of the Colorado game, prep for the West Virginia game, it's here. All right. Let's go ahead and jump in for those Utah fans that are here. West Virginia game. The story of the game for Utah was redemption. After an embarrassing loss on the national stage last week against Texas Tech, Utah needed a bounce back in a very bad way in order to keep their season from taking a sharp turn for the worse. Last week's episode, I talked about them needing a proverbial birdie to keep their metaphorical golf round intact, and I think they did just that. They took it to the Mountaineers 48-14, and reestablish themselves as one of the real contenders for this year's Big 12 championship race. Starting off offensively, I'll oftentimes talk first about Devin Dampier. His performance this week, I thought, looked a lot better. I think this is the most complete performance we've seen from him. He is 21 for 26, which is 81% completion percentage. That's phenomenal. 237 yards of pass production for him. I would have loved to have seen, you know, and maybe I'm comparing apples to oranges, you know, you see some of these SEC quarterbacks go off for like 300 or 350 yards or 400 yards passing. It's just a different style of offense, I think, a different style of football, number one, from conference to conference. But number two, Utah being such an offense, a rush-centered offense, a ground-centered offense, you're just not going to see that as much. So, you know, you might shake your head and say, 237 yards against a team like West Virginia. Well, that's a pretty complete night for Devin Dampier. He threw for four touchdowns, which is very impressive in my mind. The genie is out of the bottle, I think, a little bit with interceptions. You know, Devin Dampier had gone the first several games without having any interceptions. Then he threw two against Texas Tech. He threw one this last weekend against West Virginia. It was a very poorly thrown ball. He actually had two wide-open receivers on the boundary. But, you know, I guess we'll forgive him that because he also had one touchdown on the ground. That brings him to just over 1,000 yards passing on the season for an average of 72.5% completion percentage, 11 touchdowns for the year, which almost matches his entire season total last year, and he's only thrown three interceptions. I think that's a pretty good ratio to be excited about. He has 258 yards rushing on the ground and three touchdowns as well. I thought he was a lot smarter with the football this weekend, aside from the interception I just mentioned. as well as there was one play that he did complete the pass, but he almost got sacked, and he kind of held the ball out there for a defensive end to swat at. I was very nervous for him in that moment. But in general, much, much better protection of the football. Did a lot better scrambling to further the passing game, and not just scrambling. He really only ran when he needed to. I thought when he did scramble, the scrambles were better, not putting himself in nearly as much danger, not as bad situations to get hurt or anything like that. So on the ground, Utah rushed for 242 yards and one touchdown, which put their total offensive production at 532 yards for six touchdowns and two field goals. I thought that Nakari Rogers ran really hard this weekend. He impressed me with his speed and his physicality. He certainly did not shy away from the West Virginia defense at all. A note of improvement, by the way, on the special teams front. I just mentioned the two field goals we got. Freshman kicker Dylan Curtis was a perfect 8-for-8 on his six PATs and two field goals, though his longest field goal was only from 33 yards. And as our faithful listener Coach Buck says, that's exactly what a kicker should be expected to do, which is to never miss a kick under 50 yards ever, in all caps. So thanks for that, Coach Buck. Anyway, Utah's offense killed it, not only in points, but in time of possession. They had five possessions of 10 or more plays, one other possession of 9 plays. The defense played exceptionally well, as always. They held West Virginia to 85 passing yards, but they did allow 260-plus yards of rushing, which, by the way, thank you, West Virginia, for making me look like an absolute idiot after I spent all of last week's episode talking about how little they run the ball, and then three-quarters of their offense production came on the ground. So that was fun. Also, the only running back I talked about last week, number 28, Tyler Jacklish, only ran the ball once for a negative 1 yard. So in the meantime, they used a combination of other running backs, quarterbacks, and receivers. They racked up, like I said, about 262 yards of rushing through various types of plays. As far as injuries go, unfortunately, it looks like safety Nate Ritchie sustained what looked like a serious leg injury of some kind, as well as safety and wide receiver Jackson Benny also sustained a lower extremity injury. Again, I don't know any information about this from behind the scenes, but just, you know, my experience as a physical therapist, I'm hoping it wasn't an ACL. It looked like it could have been an ACL or a sprain of some kind, but again, I guess we'll know when we know. It was a lot of fun to see Utah's twos and threes get in for basically the entire fourth quarter. Quarterback Bird Ficklin was perfect again through the air, going 4-for-4 for 53 yards and one touchdown. A guy that stuck out to me actually was number 13, Daniel Bray. He showed some moxie on three rushes for 32 yards, had some great cuts, put his shoulder down. Kind of makes you excited to see, you know, who we have in the running back room. Has some good depth behind Nakari Rogers and Wayshon Parker. The win brought the Utes close to being back inside that top 25 poll that they got voted out of. They earned 52 votes this week behind only South Florida. The Utes will have a bye week this week, and then we'll plan to face off against the first team standing in their way of that top 25 ranking, the current holders of the 25th spot, the ASU Sun Devils. We'll see if we can get crowd favorite Jake Kelso, resident physical therapist and ASU Sun Angel fan, back on the show. He was fun to have last year. That game will take place in Salt Lake City on Saturday, October 11th. At 8:15 Mountain Standard Time. I think we'll be Mountain Standard Time by then. I think Daylight Savings Time ends this week or next week. I forget. Either way, it's at 8:15. Just listen to your phones. So that's it for Utah this week. Jumping into the BYU game. BYU Colorado. What a game. I mean, gosh, what a football game. I think my hands are still sweating. Still sweating from that game. In a rematch from last year's Alamo Bowl, the Colorado Buffaloes had coined the term "Remember the Alamo," despite Coach Sanders' insistence earlier in the week that last year's rout at the hand of BYU would really be given no attention during their preparation this week. Anyway, the story for the first quarter of the game definitely was Colorado's offense, namely Caden Salter, quarterback, who led the Buffs to a very quick 14-0 lead. It seemed like it was going to be a very rough game for the Cougs. But kudos to both the coaching staff and the players on the BYU squad, because they took those two quick punches and then they responded. The offense calmly drove down the field, converted a 28-yard field goal, and then the defense dug their heels in and sort of righted the ship. They were able to score a touchdown before the end of the half, aided by two pass interference calls on the Colorado defense. Side note, I believe that there were three or four.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Four pass interference calls against the Buffaloes for the entire game. I'm shocked there weren't more. I felt like BYU receivers were wearing Colorado defenders like a cape all game. But anyway, the tide definitely turned, or at least started to turn, around the half as the Cougs got the ball after the half. They would go on to take the lead after a four-yard reception in the end zone to Chase Roberts. And then they would actually end up giving up a touchdown of their own next series, giving the lead back to Colorado. Another lead change would go the Cougs' way after they went 77 yards on eight plays, culminating in a 32-yard touchdown run by number five, Cody Hagan. Sadly, Will Farron's field goal streak would end on BYU's next possession, as he pulled a 55-yard attempt to the left, which gave Colorado the chance to again, you know, regain the lead. But the Cougars defense would go on to dig their heels in, hold off Deion's Buffs, and hold on for a 24-21 win. It was stressful, to say the least, and maybe this is bad of me to say, maybe it's too soon, but I'm convinced that the stress of this football game was what caused President Nelson to pass away. It was stressful. Notes of the game, Bear Bachmeier was 19 for 27 for 179 yards and two touchdowns, no interceptions. Again, you'd love to see higher numbers than that. You know, 179 yards of passing is not an exceeding amount. But again, I think that BYU is kind of hitting their stride, as it were. He also had 100 yards rushing, or about that. I think he had 98 yards of rushing on 15 carries, which looked really excellent. You had five different receivers catching multiple footballs for the Cougs, the leading wideout being Chase Roberts, who logged five catches for 49 yards and two touchdowns. The defense had 19 different tacklers on the night, which is impressive. Isaiah Glasker had an interception, giving BYU a plus-one edge on the turnover battle against the Buffs. They held Colorado to 109 yards passing and 172 yards rushing, for just under 300 yards total. I thought it was a very good game, honestly. I thought it was obviously a poor start. You would have loved to have seen BYU's defense come out the gates ready to go. It's almost like, you know, we use the kind of the metaphor of getting punched in the mouth, right? You come out in the game, if you're not ready, you get punched in the mouth. It's almost like you want someone to punch you in the mouth before the game starts, if there's a way to do that, right? Just you have to come out the gate a little stronger, a little bit faster, right? I thought they did an excellent job of responding, excellent job of kind of fighting the pressure, fighting the momentum, getting momentum back on their side. I thought it was very reminiscent of a lot of the games that they won last year. I think it's kind of funny. You take a team like BYU, and you know traditionally they tend to perform a certain way over a certain number of years, right? They lose close games or they get blown out a lot, and you just start to not expect a team like this to be able to win games like this, right? Close games, games where they're behind, games where they have to you know, make up a score, or they get scored on quick, and so it's like, oh man, the momentum. But you think about teams like, and again, I'm in no way comparing this BYU team to an Alabama or a Georgia, but when you are Alabama or a Georgia fan, you just expect, hey, like, this is no problem for them to come back from. You know, being in close games like this, we are used to this, and we know, we have confidence that our team is able to come back in games like this. It's just who you are. And so you look at a lot of these games last year that BYU won, these close games against Utah or Oklahoma State, or even close ones they lost against teams like Kansas or ASU, and you think, oh man, what a fluke, or how lucky. Maybe at the start it was luck, and just things, the ball happened to bounce your way. But I think to a certain extent, the more that you do this, the more that you continue to play at a high level, the more that you continue to excel and be able to compete in these highly competitive, high pressure, you know, situations that are greatly influenced by the momentum of the game, the better you get at it. And I think it becomes a skill, not just a matter of luck. So I was very proud of the Cougs for responding the way they did. Really excited for that game. Mostly excited because by winning that game, both Utah and BYU, they've made me look pretty good, because so far this year on my record predictions, I am 9-0. Not to toot my own horn, but the only predicted loss that I had this year so far was Utah versus Texas Tech at home, which came to pass, as we know. So I'm hoping that a win against West Virginia this week for BYU, which we'll predict here in a minute, will bring me to being 10-0 after the bye week for Utah. So anyway, let's go ahead and jump over to our notes for West Virginia for this coming week. Again, if you listened, if you're, you know, one of our fans that we're one of our listeners that is both a BYU and a Utah fan, such as myself, you probably already heard a decent amount about West Virginia in last week's scouting report for Utah. We actually have a decent amount of either corrections or updating to do. It's interesting, excuse me, to see how differently a team can play, or how differently a team can look, or the difference they'll take in strategy or personnel from week to week. So we definitely have some things to update. At this point, West Virginia are 2-3 with wins against Pitt and Robert Morris, but losses against Utah, Ohio, that's Bobcats, not Buckeyes, and Kansas. Offensively, after the Utah game this last weekend, the Mountaineers now average less than 400 yards per game, which is good for 68th in football, FBS football. They saw a drop in their pass game, but an increase in their running game to 24th in college football. So that's pretty good. I think, you know, being top 25 in anything in college football is pretty good. They averaged 22 points per game on offense. West Virginia, again, this is a stat I thought was really interesting last week, and I think continues to be notable this week, is that West Virginia remains ranked number one in the country in red zone offense. They score on 100% of red zone opportunities. And I'm sure that will be an area that Coach Jay Hill will focus on. Number one, precluding any sort of play into the red zone, preventing them from even getting there. If they score on 100% of red zone opportunities, then obviously your first idea is, let's not let them get there, right? Number two is trying to force some sort of red zone or goal line stand. They would be the first team in the country to do it so far this year. Defensively, West Virginia dropped from number 60 in the country to number 75, allowing 364 yards and just under 27 points per game. BYU ranks number 6 in the country in turnover margin at plus 6. They also rank number 14 in time of possession at just over 33 minutes, while West Virginia ranks 129th at around 26 minutes. Offensively, let's dive in first to just their overall offense, so we can kind of get a better understanding of the personnel that we'll be looking at. Last week in the Utah episode, I kind of scouted them as a team that is obviously running a spread offense, a shotgun offense, that typically relies on a lot of passing, very little running. Most passes are going to be quick one read or two read throws, throws that are designed to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly because the offensive line may or may not be capable of holding out blocks for that long. I told you that they wouldn't run the ball very much. I told you that they'd be playing with certain quarterbacks that they've been using all year long. I don't know that I could have been more wrong about what their game plan was actually going to be. It's a good thing that I'm not employed on the Utah offensive side of the ball. They would have been very unprepared this coming week. They obviously have better intel than I do, but I wouldn't have been surprised if Morgan Scalley and his defensive players were a little bit surprised at what they saw this last week. They definitely ran the ball a lot more and with different guys. They continued to run, as they have in the past, lots of off-tackle runs, outside edge or sweep runs. They added in some good counters, which they had some good success with this last week. I mentioned earlier that they got a lot of their rushing yards, not only off of running backs, but with scrambling quarterbacks.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Backs, planned QB runs, getting wide receivers involved. They set up a couple like reverse fakes to get eventually they would kind of set up a real reverse, which would go for a long run. This is a good example of how a good offensive coordinator at least can take a team that's not as talented as their opponent and help them to succeed by kind of nurturing a lackadaisical mentality in the defense. So the running game, definitely something to look out for this week. On the defensive side of the football for BYU. Again, if they kind of tend to pivot back to their passing game more this week against BYU than they did against Utah, you can look for, like I mentioned just a second ago, quick throws, one, maybe two reads, meaning the quarterback's not going to be spending a whole lot of time, going through three or four or five different receivers trying to see who's open. His goal is to have that ball out in less than 2.5 seconds, right? Anything longer than that, and his risk of getting sacked goes way up. See lots of swing routes out of the backfield from the running backs. Lots of wheel routes, same thing from the running backs, which is a route where you run from the backfield, kind of run towards the sideline in a curved fashion, and then run up the sideline like a fade. They ran some vertical routes and something we call a sluggo, which is an abbreviation of a slant and go, which is basically you run one or two steps upfield, cut very hard towards the middle. Then as your defender starts to cut, come forward to try to defend that slant, then you plant your inside foot in the ground and cut vertically again. And hopefully as they're running downfield, now you're running upfield right past them. Posts, cross routes, fade routes, deep hitches, arrows, lots of just standard shotgun stuff, right? If they happen to throw. Personnel-wise, this is where I think things will get a little bit more interesting for BYU this week compared to what we saw or what we thought we would have seen last week against Utah. West Virginia appears to be going through a quarterback carousel. We talked a lot last week about number 8, Nico Markiel for Utah, and we didn't end up seeing him at all. I don't know if he was injured or if he just lost the starting spot. But we actually ended up seeing a combination of number 13, Jalen Henderson, and number 14, Khalil Wilkins. We mentioned Jalen Henderson last week. We saw some of him against Kansas. Jalen Henderson, he's 6'3", 227 pounds. He's a senior. And like I mentioned last week, this guy's more of a runner. Not that he won't throw, but when you see him on the field, you're definitely looking for a run key from the offensive line. I mentioned this last week. I don't remember in which episode, BYU or Utah, but a run key or a pass key, we call it just generally speaking an offensive line key. That's how you know from a defensive back perspective or a linebacker perspective what the oncoming play is most likely going to be. Now, there's a little bit of nuance to this, so you can't always say this 100% of the time, But generally speaking, I, as a defensive back, if I'm watching the offensive line at the snap, the moment the ball is snapped, if the defensive linemen pretty much stand up vertically or start to backpedal and form a pocket, then I can be very confident that most likely this play is going to be a passing play, right? And I need to get into coverage. Versus if at the snap of the ball, the offensive linemen, they take off hard and fast going either horizontally or vertically downfield, I can be very confident that, you know, they're most likely going to be running the ball. Now, there are some exceptions with things like a run pass option. And in that case, your role is to defend your receiver. But basically, if as you guys are watching football as fans, if you know, 9 times out of 10 want to understand what most likely is coming your way, look at what the offensive linemen do the moment the ball is snapped. And that will tell you a lot. So, you know, that's something that you'll want to look out for when Jalen Henderson's on the field. You're most likely going to be seeing a lot of run keys from the offensive line, as he's probably going to be keeping the ball a lot for himself. I mentioned last week that if I were the West Virginia coaching staff, I would do a 2-QB system with Jalen Henderson and Nico Markiel, the throwing quarterback, which is kind of what they did last week against Utah, but just with a different quarterback. It seemed that they leaned more heavily on Henderson for production on the ground than they had in previous weeks. So BYU should be on the lookout for him. Should definitely be aware of who he is and when he's in the game. He's fast and can juke you, but beware, he will also put his shoulder in your chest. We also saw, like I mentioned, number 14, Khalil Wilkins, 6'3", 200 pounds. He's a freshman out of Washington, D.C. He only threw 6 balls, and he only connected on 3 of them, but those 3 passes went for 63 yards and a touchdown. So he also contributed on the ground with about 40 yards of rushing. This dude is also a mobile quarterback, obviously. So it'll be interesting to see who we get a dose of next week against BYU, if it will be number 14, Wilkins, number 13, Henderson, or number 8, Nico Markiel. Definitely a quarterback carousel for West Virginia. Running backs, as I mentioned, first thing, they did use their running backs a lot more on the ground than they had against Kansas earlier this year. As I mentioned to you guys, number 28, Tyler Jacklich, was the guy that we focused on a lot last week because he got a lot of the carries against Kansas. We only saw him run the ball once against the Utes, and it was for -1 yard. When he does get the ball, he runs very hard. He's a good size. He's 6'2", 223 pounds. He's powerful. He can lower his shoulder. He often opts for contact instead of trying to cut or juke into open space. But the guy that we actually saw the most touches out of the two guys that we saw the most touches from out of the backfield last weekend for the Mountaineers were number 27, Clay Ash. He's 5'9", 194 pounds. He's a sophomore. He's pretty tough. I mean, I don't, again, against West Virginia, I'm trying not to be super biased, but what I see on film, I'm just not super, super impressed with this running back room. You'll also see a little bit of number 20, Dior Hubbard. He's 5'10", 189 pounds. He's a freshman. Again, both of those guys, they did well enough. They got, you know, a dozen or two dozen yards on a handful of carries. I'm sure they'll get more load this next week against BYU as they try to establish the run game. But I think the biggest story is a lot of these wide receivers that we would see either catching balls downfield or taking some of these end-around runs that West Virginia seems to be so particular to run or particularly interested in running. It's interesting because against Kansas, I didn't see much from this position group. And while they still didn't do very much through the air, I think they only had 85 yards of receiving against Utah. They did contribute to over 261 yards of rushing against Utah. So there definitely was some film to watch and some scouting to rethink even just 1 week later. Two guys to be aware of are number 4, Cam Vaughn, 6'2", 185-pound sophomore. I think Cam stuck out to me most against Utah as far as dangerous players to be aware of on the offensive side of the ball. He caught a couple passes, but he had, you know, a lot of runs on the outside that were really quick and fast. And, you know, he's really aggressive to get downhill. He makes good cuts, you know, around or through some blocks and is able to kind of dip his shoulder and avoid the tackle. Also, number seven, Jared Bowie, 5'9", 162-pound senior. Not very big. He only had one reception for 4 yards against the Utes, but he also had a single carry for 68 yards. So this was the kind of the end around reverse that I had mentioned earlier. They were kind of setting that up all game long where they'd fake the reverse and then let Jalen Henderson keep it on a middle quarterback run or an off tackle quarterback run. And then finally they did actually hand off the reverse, and Jared Bowie has enough speed despite his size, you know, to go 68 yards against defense like Utah. So he's someone that BYU should definitely pay attention to. You might be willing to overlook him because of his size, but honestly, if he can put a big gash in your defense, you know, he has the ability to do that, is what I'm saying. Those are the two guys to pay most attention to. I also mentioned last week, number 80, tight end Grayson Barnes. Didn't see much from him this last week, but he was, at least prior to last week, he was West Virginia's second leading pass catcher. He's able to bring balls down mostly due to his size. He's able to be brought down if you hit him low enough with enough speed and strength. Offensive line wise, I don't know that this offensive line is incredibly talented per se. They get the job done for the offensive passing strategy, like I mentioned, which is to get the ball out in less than 2.5 seconds, which is good for West Virginia because I don't think these guys are able to hold much longer than that. They do okay to pretty good with zone blocking or gap blocking schemes in the middle or off tackle. I think they do better with reach blocking to the perimeter, which is where they stretch or they run horizontally to set an edge for a running back to get around. I think when it comes to run defense, BYU will do quite well. They showed that against Colorado last Saturday night. Unfortunately, what they also showed is that they could really struggle to contain a guy like Henderson. So it'd be interesting to see what, you know, what BYU's defense is able to do right off the bat. I think if they can come out and force West Virginia to punt on their first two series, it's going to be a long day for West Virginia versus if West Virginia is able to come out and kind of run the ball a little bit and get something done against BYU that first series or two, then we might have more of a matchup. Defensively, again, let's start just with the defensive strategy or the defensive playbook. Again, they run just a lot of standard nickel defense, 4-2-5. I mentioned last week, they have these kind of stand-up ends. They're very wide, like a 7 or a 9 technique, meaning they stand out way wider than most defensive ends would normally do. And rather than being down in a 3 or a 4-point stance getting real low, they like to stand up nice and tall, which honestly, I don't understand because it makes them a lot easier to block. They tend to run a lot of cover one. They'll do a couple standard linebacker blitzes, either a single linebacker blitz, or they'll do one where they slant all of the defensive linemen to one side, and then the linebackers will wrap around the opposite side. So, for example, we're going to say, hey, all of the defensive linemen, everyone slant to the left when you rush, and then the linebackers will wrap around to the right, trying to confuse the offensive line and get them to, you know, miss somebody on the blocking assignment. They will occasionally run a 4-3 formation in kind of medium down and distance situations. But generally speaking, they're going to stay in that 4-2-5. Lots of cover one, lots of man covers. So personnel-wise, starting with the defensive line, I'm going to actually hold off on commenting on the defensive line until I make it back to the safeties. So we'll get back to the big boys in a minute. Linebackers. Linebackers can be very undisciplined in their pressures, specifically in their rushing lanes. They like to allow quarterbacks like Kansas's Jalen Daniels, Utah's Devin Dampier, and hopefully BYU's Barrett Bachmeier to scramble. Starting with some personnel, number 15, Ben Cutter. He's a 6 foot, 226-pound junior. He has his eyes in the backfield a lot. As well as number 35, Reed Carrico. He's also about the same size, 6'2", 230 pounds. He's a senior. He's got 22 tackles on the year. And again, you know, this is a guy where BYU should make their money. He's a run-first linebacker who's quick to run too far upfield on his blitzes. He leaves a lot of cutback lanes. He's very frequently late to his pass coverage. Utah was able to run past him on several occasions last week, and you'd hope that BYU would be able to do the same with running back talents like LJ Martin and Sione Moa. I think their best linebacker that they have by far is number 30, Chase Wilson. He's 6'1", 230 pounds. He's a senior. He has three sacks and an interception. He's got a good motor and gets upfield quick when he blitzes, which is common. He blitzes a lot. But he's actually quite good with his reads. He's as aggressive as he needs to be when it calls for it, but he's quick at making his reads. He's also good at keeping his head on a swivel for any sort of misdirection or cutback. He's quick in the open field, and he might not be able to chase down a truly, you know, fast running back or quarterback from behind, but if he has a good in-to-out angle at you in the backfield, you'll likely have to make a miss. Speaking about the linebackers and the defensive backs together, this defensive backfield is pretty undisciplined. They were against Kansas and they were against Utah. Almost every linebacker or defensive back got beat on some sort of misdirection play or pass play against Kansas and a couple times against Utah as well, just because their eyes were in the backfield and they weren't doing their jobs. They generally take, you know, some bad angles. They're a little bit undisciplined in their rush lanes and gap assignments. Their defensive backs don't strike me as particularly adept at getting their hands on the ball. The only reason they intercepted Devin Dampier last week was because it was a horribly thrown football. Anybody that is somewhat athletic should be able to go get that. I mentioned this last week, and this stat actually only got more interesting as the week went on. Safeties to be aware of. Defensive back, number 5, Fred Perry. He's a senior. He's 5'11", 206 pounds, excuse me. He has 33 tackles on the year, one sack and two pass deflections. He is the team's leading tackler. Number 24, safety Darian Lewis. He's only 5'9", he's 194 pounds. He's got 30 tackles and two interceptions. He is the second leading tackler on the team. Number 14, safety Kekura Tarnue, 6 foot, 200 pound senior. He's got 23 tackles, one forced fumble, and two pass deflections on the year. He's the third leading tackler. So I said it last week, but it's worse now. If you're three leading tacklers or safeties, that's a problem. In fact, and this is where I'm kind of wrapping back to the discussion about the defensive line, West Virginia's top 10 leading tacklers are defensive backs and linebackers. Before you even get to any defensive linemen on that list at number 11. We've mentioned that those defensive linemen don't get a good push up front. They're undisciplined in their gap assignments and their pass rush lanes. The defensive ends often run upfield, leaving the edges exposed to end around running plays. So BYU should have a field day with these guys. That's assuming they come out of the gates ready to play, you know, unlike what we saw last week against Colorado. But still, if your three leading tacklers are safeties, and your top 10 leading tacklers, none of them are defensive linemen, that usually bodes well for a team like BYU who likes to run the football. I mentioned earlier, I think the BYU's offense is in an excellent spot right now. They've been getting momentum each week as they face bigger and bigger talent. Players are getting more confidence, including Bear Bachmeier, who's now throwing the ball at just under 68% for around 700 yards, 6 touchdowns, and most importantly, 0 interceptions. Chase Roberts is becoming more and more productive every week, and while they might take a step back as far as the talent they're facing this week compared to Colorado, it's crucial that BYU's offense continue this upward trajectory if they're serious at all about contending in the Big 12 this season. The game this Friday will kick off in Provo at 8:30 Mountain Daylight Time on ESPN. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. We need more Friday night college football. I know that the high school kids kind of have a claim to Friday night lights and all, but I, for one, think there is more than enough football to go around for everybody. I love Friday night games, especially Friday night games in Provo. Everyone knows how tough BYU are to beat at night in Lavelle Edwards Stadium. I, for one, do not envy the Mountaineers as they are coming off this beating they took against Utah. now having to travel back to the state of Utah on a short week of preparation against the 23rd ranked team in the country, who honestly haven't had a hot streak like the one they're on these last 12 months, probably since Lavelle Edwards was at the helm. The spread is BYU by 19.5 points. I will take BYU to cover, and will say they likely end up with something like 35-13 win. Cougs over Mountaineers. Interested to hear what you think. Hoping that these scouting reports and film sessions are useful for you all and helping understand the game of football. Hope it makes it more fun to watch. Hope it makes you feel like you understand the game better. That you're, you know, part of the team. Anyway, appreciate you. Thanks for listening in. Go Utes. Go Cougs.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.